Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The blood plot was amazing.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
I just like have this visual, this mental picture of just droves of people just, hey, bleed me.
Yeah.
Till I lose control.
For the record, if we did do the doctor scene, the cost of the doctor was going to be two
copper bits.
Whatever.
2 ounces of.
I forget exactly how much, but whatever you got.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was going to be exactly that. Yeah.
Breaking even.
It costs blood to go to the doctor. That's so unfair.
It's a bleeding economy, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it turns out you're low on blood. So that'll be 2 ounces of blood. Mm-hmm. Pay for that diagnosis.
Are you going to use them for labs? Or you
got to spend blood to make blood.
Oh. There it is.
Can we please encounter a blood bank? We don't need to go inside. Just see an existing one.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Moving on.
That'll be like a separate heist series that we do, just robbing the blood bank.
Yes. Here. I mean, it'd be a very morbid Courier's Call episode for them to have.
Wendell, Gable, and Nodos head down the tunnel as the finch flies away, and we follow the finch into the sky and then zip kind of over to Orimar and Travis. Orimar and Travis, where you at?
I'm happy that in this intervening time, we have kind of made our way to where we need to be, but...
I love that.
Enough time has passed where we are,
Oh, I would like to find you. I think you are both on a boat.
Yes.
You're on one of these airboat equivalents that we have described, where in order to get around to new locations in the city, there's a lot of infrastructure set up for people to like take established routes. But if you are going somewhere that is not like a frequently traveled or established route, I believe there are a couple steps involved. First of all, there is like a grappling hook, like catapult blaster thing that you have to shoot to anchor itself somewhere, which establishes a firm line. Then you have these ships that are propelled, but they can only move forward. You can't really steer them. And I was like, how do we get the fun zip of an airboat kind of with the technology that we have established without abusing Featherweave? Because Featherweave, again, is extremely rare. It's not the sort of thing that people would use for boats. And I remember, I don't know if anybody else got this toy as a child, but it was like a tin ship that you had to like put a little candle on. Huh. And it would, the heat of that candle would draw water up a tube and then spit it out the back of the tube. So it was like kind of like an air heat powered motor ship. I think it showed up in the Ponyo film, if anybody's familiar with that Studio Ghibli classic. It is a really cool thing. I don't know the physics of it. I don't know how well it scales, but I really do love the idea that we get some deep, dense swamp peat that we can like dig up that burns just like super hot, super efficiently. We can put a lump of that on like one of these engines and just have like the firm putt-putt of this ship across a grappling line.
So this is like a hot air boat, hot air balloon, but for the water.
Nice.
Yeah, kind
of. Orimar is actually kind of reticent about the engine for this. Like once he ignites it and it kicks into life, he actually kind of bodily moves back a full step away from the open flame.
Liz, I would absolutely love for you to be our like commissioned boat captain. You know, the person that they hired to take them out into the swamp.
I think I'd be French, right? Okay, I can do that.
And an adult.
Doesn't have to be French. Yeah. Lenny was nowhere near.
And so over here you see these beautiful trees that, well, they grow. And that's all you
are you giving know. A tour or just talking to yourself?
I'm just enjoying my time out here. This
okay, that's so. Fine.
While you're having that kind of I think because, you know, you speaking as a bird would be a surprise. So upon you speaking out of turn, Orimar thinks quickly and kind of becomes the pseudo-ventriloquist dummy to be speaking in Travis's stead to cover that.
I'm so sorry. Please, I do not want to do a talent show here. This is just my job. I understand it's very talented, but it's not my bag. So if you are,
well,
just keep that to yourself.
Would it be more interesting if perhaps I drank a glass of water while I spoke?
I would prefer you didn't. The water supply on the boat is very limited, and there's brackish water everywhere, so we are unable to drink it. So I prefer you would not.
I assure you, I can drink brackish.
Orimar like reaches into their coat and pulls out an apple and starts chewing that instead.
It is very impressive. Actually, you know what? I say I do not like these sort of talents, but that is because I feel like I am untalented. It makes me feel just a little bit less than what I am, you know?
I'm sure you could eat an apple if you tried.
I know, I feel like I could. You're fun. You're funny. I'll leave you to do it.
So, you two were also out here on a hunting trip?
I feel like we should have chartered a private boat instead of getting just a public tour.
Orimar kind of like nods and you can't quietly sign. This isn't how that works. But Orimar kind of like nods like as slightly as they can in a kind of emphatic manner being like, I know. I think there's like a very brief flashback to the kind of boat commandeering space where we actively tried to go and get like a private boat. And each time the amount asked for a private boat, Orimar kind of tilts their head in the kind of like, I don't want to pay that. And there is no way in hell Travis is going to pay for anything ever. So we end up doing a ride share and we are not enjoying it.
So first we will be dropping off the ventriloquist and
the dummy, I hope.
It's very funny. The bit is very strong.
it is super impressive. Such an impressive talent. I'm surprised that to see another group head out to the Mangroneals that seem more equipped for ventriloquist performance than hunting.
Orimar, I think, pulls out. Yeah, he has a pistol. He pulls out a pistol and then does like, you know, an effortless twirl of it in the fingers. Very Revolver Ocelot.
Oh, yeah.
And winks at this hunter and then puts the revolver back without saying anything.
Never mind, never mind. I see you know your way around a firearm, but does your group know about Chasseur Sumarte?
I'm sorry, sir. Please say that again. It offends my sensibilities.
Look, I know that we said it last time and we got people who do speak French to say it properly, but I'm playing a character, clearly has an accent of some sort, so it's okay if that character gets it wrong.
That's whatever.
I'm bulletproof in this moment.
Whatever puts your head to sleep.
Nothing helps me sleep at night. I have ADHD. I take ADHD meds, and those keep you up. So, no, this isn't going to help me sleep at night. Am I self-conscious about it? Yes. Am I more self-conscious about it since you chose to point it out to me? Also, yes. But here we are. Do you or do you not know the local legend that I'm about to impart to you?
I think that entire spiel, I assume, being in character, Orimar is just kind of like, their face can't flush in embarrassment, but is just kind of like lost of how to handle the social grace. So just kind of slowly and robotically shakes their head no, that they have not heard this story before, and elaborately does a twirl of the hand of a do go on, sir.
If you're out here hunting, I assume you're after Venombacks, the deer that run around these parts.
Yeah, slow nod, the kind of like, I've hunted some Venombacks in my... Actually, this is an open conversation, so Orimar can actually sign without being weird. Oh yeah, delightful creatures.
Yep, livers definitely go for a pretty penny. Problem is, nights like this, when the moon is thin, he says, indicating up to the crescent moon above, things are a little bit more hidden, a little bit more obscure than they might normally be. And that's when Chasseur comes out. It's a creature that resembles the deer, walks like the deer, but walks with an unearthly light. They say that it drains the blood of its victims, leaves them floating in the brackish swamp, preserved, ready to be discovered by what other unfortunate souls might come out without their wits about them.
Well, fortunately, I and my bird are as tough as jerky these days. The captain laughs and it sounds...
Hell!
Jesus Christ. I have a series of cough drops back there. I also have some gammer mints if you get to partake.
Orimar politely waves no and consumes another apple.
Right.
So long as you're prepared to maybe be contending with a monster, Venombacks are going to be good for you. Obviously, just wear gloves because they're out here amongst the mangroneel. So... That's tough touching, if you know what I mean. And what I mean is that it will burn your skin with a horrible poison coming from the mangroneel. You don't want that.
Orimar, I think enjoying the character of this hunter, who is incredibly devil-may-care, signs back, poison? Oh no, not poison. I don't know how you can sign that sarcastically, but he manages.
There has to be sarcasm in sign language. Like, in our world, absolutely. I can't imagine a population of people not having access
to
sarcasm.
I think his head tilts and eye roll in addition to the hand gesture. Poison. Oh, no. My poor hand. So vulnerable to poison.
I sense a kindred spirit in you. They take out a flask, pour a little measure of it, and pass it over to Orimar.
I couldn't possibly. We'll ruin the apples.
But I can.
Yeah, Orimar gives you the shot of flask moonshine.
You know those drinking bird little desk toys?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just that.
Yeah, you just beak a little measure of it. It definitely burns. I love the name of moonshine, and by this time our All My Fantasy Skyjacks episodes have aired, so we do know culturally more about the moon, even if the performers don't know. But I do like the idea that moonshine, being a drink, I think primarily cared for under the light of the moon in Sphere, definitely helps you see things that are normally concealed. And Travis, especially being a child of the forest, a forest son, as you drink this, you feel that burn go down, and you kind of feel throughout your body like the warmth of the alcohol radiate throughout you. You can see in the night air like a brighter glow from this place. It's as if the light here is brighter than it was before. It is less midnight dark for you. And in that, you can see lights kind of winking on and off in the darkness ahead of you amongst the mangroneel.
Oh, this is some pretty strong stuff.
That is a mighty impressive Muppet you got there.
The captain winks.
With that, I think we can see the engine of the boat like sputter down to a slower float as you bump into the edge of like some muddy land.
All right, everyone, please watch your step as you leave. If you would like to leave me any reviews, please do. And 5 stars for 5 great minutes on the ride with me.
Orimar, because we've had these kind of things where he's been well prepared in advance, tosses you a silver bit with 5 stars stamped in it.
My. Fantastic. Sir, I offer this to my good clients. If you would like to recall me at any time, please just send a pinch and I will. You can make a scheduled ride if you would like.
Orimar signs back, as long as you talk as much as I do.
But it's a weird thing to say. But okay, I will do this
being
for you.
Not at all, but still. Yeah, we step off the boat. There's other passengers heading off elsewhere, or does the hunter follow?
Yeah, well, I think Liz had mentioned that those characters were getting dropped off somewhere else. So he just sort of waves, happy hunting, strangers. As we can see, like Liz's character gets up on this grappling cannon and fires it off for the next location. Yeah,
that's metal, honestly.
Amazing.
With the kind of like, I guess, receding sound of the burning engine, Orimar kind of like nods to Travis, kind of like lead the way. And he pulls out an empty jar and kind of like puts it to his mouth. And yeah, it starts to like slowly fill with like apple puree as we start walking to where we're walking to.
Ooh, gross. Well, Travis, you are out kind of in an area that, like, you were almost called to. I'm curious, how are you tracking this other changeling? What method is Travis using?
I think, let me know if this is not possible. I don't think that just by looking at a changeling, another changeling could inherently tell. You know, like if you just meet someone, I don't think you can inherently tell that they're a changeling.
Yeah, I think we've established that you can't do that because you didn't discover that this was another changeling until like basically right before you left.
Mm-hmm. But I think that if you know, you're able to sort of sense the magic, not of the changeling, but of the actual change. So I think that basically they're following like a trail of locations where this changeling has transformed.
That is the winking in the distance.
Oh!
I kind of think, like, if we flashback, this is like almost Ocean's 11, like heist style in the past. Travis was, it's not that like other boats were too expensive or that Travis was completely unwilling to invest in the adventure. Travis was like looking around for someone who had moonshine. And the thing that Travis knew and wanted is like, I'm not going to pay for this moonshine. there is someone that I can charm into giving me free moonshine. So you like sized up at the boat like commission area which passengers had moonshine, and you slowly like maneuvered Orimar to split a ride with them. Now, having the moonshine in your system, you are seeing, quote unquote, with the light of the moon. It is said in Sphere that the light of the moon can reveal hidden things. And to you, as a changeling, being a child of the forest, when you are in line with the moon, you can see with the queen's sight. Which means you can see things like the energy of transformation. Out in the distance, these winking lights reflect to you where this changeling has transformed. Some of them are brighter, some of them are fainter, which means you have a path to follow.
You really should have tried the moonshine. I don't know if it would have worked, but...
I can't compromise the apple nectar I'm working on.
I'm excited for this to all lead to something.
Okay, is that you asking in character or out of character?
No. I'm just excited. I don't want to know. I want to go along for the ride.
I mean, for as long as nobody asks, or I will not explain. But...
God, I love it. I absolutely love it. Hey, heroes, it's James, your game master, and for real. This time I'm serious about it. This is the generic mid-roll. Those other generic mid-rolls, they were generic, but now they are. Just so everybody knows, I'm doing generic mid-rolls because I recently had a baby. And taking care of a newborn does not leave me with time to do most of my regular podcast duties. Obviously, Skyjax is going to continue posting. I'm just not going to be making bespoke mid-roll announcements for it. With that said, first, I want to thank Lex, the Lexicon artist, for joining us as a guest for this arc. And I want to let everyone listening know that Lex is currently touring. So if you have enjoyed their performances here on the show, and you're also in a position where you think you can go out and see shows safely, I highly recommend showing up to Lex's tour. They're going from the East Coast through the Midwest, up and down the country throughout March and April. And you can get tickets for a performance in your area by heading to thelexiconartist.com or following the link in our show notes. I know not everybody's COVID safety protocols allows them to go out and see concerts, but if yours do, there's nothing better than supporting an artist like Lex in a very difficult time. And if you can't make it to one of the tour dates, check out Lex's website anyway and listen to their music. It's really great. In addition to our regular game, for this arc, we're playing StarCrossed, the two-player Forbidden Romance RPG. StarCrossed was designed by my dear friend and former network member, Alex Roberts, and is published by Bully Pulpit Games. You can pick up your own copy of StarCrossed by following the link in our show notes. A big thank you to all the cast and crew who were involved in producing the music for this arc. That is not just our guest for the arc, Lex the Lexicon artist, but it's also Arnie Parrott, our house musician, Tyler Davis, who you're going to be hearing later on, James Mendez Hodes, who wrote some lyrics for one of the songs that'll be appearing much later on in the arc, and of course Casey Tony, our editor, for choosing when and where it appears in the show. And also a huge thank you to Tracy Barnett, who assisted Casey Tony on the editing for this arc. As always, one of the biggest thank yous goes to our Patreon patrons, who made everything you're listening to possible by supporting the show. Thanks to everyone who supports us already, and everyone who's going to support us in the future.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. And so there is the path ahead of you. And I think the best way, because like we know that there is a path for Travis to follow, and it is mostly a trial and error situation of him being able to find this changeling. I'm just going to draw a random luminary to see how this section of your hunt goes. And I have here the boat.
Wow.
it just left.
I am back. You'll throw me. I am the boat.
That also represents freedom, opportunity, and labor. I think then there is, like, you have this moonshine site that is helping you find the energy of this changeling. You have brought yourself out here to capitalize on that by being amongst like the muddy shores near the Mangrenil where this being lives. The only thing left really is the labor, is like tracking down each individual like light and assessing it. I would love, instead of a montage of you moving from light to light, sensing the changes, I would love to know what Travis and Orimar are saying to each other, especially as Travis is acting primarily as the eyes in this operation here.
So, Travis, I would like you to be candid. Will you be needing any physical assistance from me?
Are you... Well, I guess I don't necessarily think so, but it'd be nice if, you know, something goes south to have someone on hand. But if you're trying to break off and take a nap, I understand that.
Orimar glances at the kind of marshy ground they've been stomping through for the last half an hour. This mattress isn't quite firm enough for my needs.
What's your sleep number?
Nathan still doesn't know what that is, even though we've had a conversation about that before.
It's still a weird thing. Mm.
not something that you would have off the top of your head.
I think Orimar smiles, realizing that a jovial laugh will go down poorly, but, you know, continues. Genuinely, though, I am always enthusiastic about making sure my crew is well protected. If you feel that the work that you have to do, with air quotes, is grave, then I'm more than happy to make sure that no harm will come to you on this venture. But still, you've been rather reserved on explaining who we're going to be having a conversation with.
Well, let me ask you, Captain, how many changelings have you met in your life?
Orimar thinks genuinely for a while. Besides you, only the one. It was while I was still serving with the Red Feathers, and I must say that encounter wasn't especially pleasant for either of us, unfortunately.
Well, do I know who he's talking about?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And I'll point out that I, as the GM, don't know who Nathan is talking about. Nathan is taking advantage of the abject creative freedom that they have to just establish anything for Orimar's background, and it is automatically true.
Mm. My abject creative freedom is only one green, so that's why I rarely use it.
And we're going to fucking disgusting. Keep it that way, Johnny.
A mechanics joke. I love that. Yes. Orimar elaborates a little bit. The nature of changelings is fascinating to the Red Feathers. After all, enlisted spies that can arrive on a scene in one form and leave in another without a trace is fascinating to those who'd be able to use them for, well, the variety of pies that the Red Feathers have fingers in. and our previous attempt at recruiting, under which I was present for, did not go very well.
Actually, Nathan, if I could, I would love to change this slightly. I like the idea that you discovered that there was a changeling on the crew and that this might have been the quartermaster of the captain you deposed.
So it's kind of like flipping this on its head, and the changeling that I encountered was essentially like a double agent. You know, they separately to whatever was going on with Oromar's life, had instilled himself as an agent within the Red Feathers, and Oromar happened to have discovered the fact this character's spy antics had a moment of slipping up, and Oromar found out. Unfortunately, with the way that Oromar's been talking about it, it did not end well for this spy. Oromar was not the person, you know, who, like, dobbed him in or anything like that. But it seemed that that particular infiltration attempt by that changeling went poorly and has kind of sat with Oromar since as the only other changeling that they have known, aside from you.
Is not to make it all about me, but when did you first know about me?
You're not especially good at being subtle, Travis Matago.
I've never had to be.
Indeed. The process of learning about you was very interesting. You actually managed to keep a very low profile by mostly gambling for your food for a while until you decided to drop the curtain. It was actually quite difficult to track that I had an additional member of my crew without me knowing. So I suppose bravo. But once that particular ruse was set aside, well, it was, I suppose, the ship has many eyes, and those eyes do like to tell me what's going on from time to time. Or at least I hope so.
Wait, so who else knows? Have I been pretending to be not a changeling this whole time and didn't need to because everybody knew and everybody just doesn't mention it to me?
Bothram Barry is very competent.
Nathan, it was Calivar who told you.
Okay. Oh. Yeah.
Well, Bathroom Barry knew for sure too, but that
discreet ultimate discretion.
I had a very reliable and trusted informant when it came to crew affairs. I don't so much have them available these days, though.
Oh. You don't have to, but you could tell me who. Again, you don't have to.
Well, it seems like you might be meeting them again soon enough, according to the ex-Captain Winchester. And I think Oromar smiles genuinely. I can't wait for you all to have a chat with Calivar once again. I have missed him, sir.
Johnny, at that name, Travis, I think we just get a quick flash of the island in the middle of a desperate battle between Travis, Gable, Dreff, and Jonnet, and the former's captain's council after they had begun their mutiny. I have to imagine there is like some kind of exchange between Calivar and Travis specifically that not scared you, but let you know that you could have been killed.
Oh, I think... So during the fight, I don't necessarily know, you know, physically exactly what he did. But I think, you know, as they're kind of like fighting and trading verbal barbs, Calivar says something to the effect of like, you know, you're not going to be able to slither your way out of this one or something like that. Where like, and at that, Travis sort of, it caused him to like pause, where Calivar is able to like almost get in. And then Travis like shakes himself back into the moment and is kind of like, no, that's just like a turn of phrase, you know, like he didn't mean that was nothing. And then he gets back into fight.
Yeah. And we move back to the present.
Indeed. All this time, our ideals might have been different at the time, but, and like he's getting more animated as he's trying to intimate this to you. Ideals might have been different at the time, but you can see now that I still persist. You can see that I am right. and then maybe I can convince him to be on the right side of things again.
I don't know that he's the type of person that you need, that's open to persuasion.
He was as stubborn as a mule on many occasions, but he knows me. He understands me. We have our differences, but I am sure with our intervening time apart, and he can see all that I, the crew, correcting himself, has achieved, he'll have no choice but to listen. Whether he takes it on board or not, I can't say, but he will listen.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'll help you make him listen, but I don't know how much more we'll be able to get beyond that. You can lead a horse to water, etc., etc.
And as you say that, Travis, you round the corner and we can see very clearly in the air this light. This is something that we determined in the All My Fantasy Skyjacks episodes, like the hidden truths that can be revealed by the moon and the power of the Forest Queen's light appears not unlike will-o-wisps. To folks who are not children of the forest, this light can be fleeting and indistinct. But to your eyes, and especially your eyes with moonshine in your system, the light appears very clear. What does a changeling's energy of transformation look like to you, Travis? We've established that it is death and rebirth in a way.
So yeah, I think when other people see it, it is just sort of like, it's like swamp gas. But especially with the moonshine, like you said, it's like a death and then a birth. So I think that it almost plays like a projector light. And I can you can see like the ghostly kind of aura of someone living. And then you can see it shrink down to like nothing and then kind of pop back and grow again. And it's almost like a flickering, like repeated, like breathing almost of like expanding and contracting.
Ooh. Yeah, in swirling in this, you can see the different spiritual forms that this person holds. There is a very pale and faint reflection of the person that you knew in this, but very prominent. There is an axolotl, which is, other people might know it by a different pronunciation, but they're these cool little salamanders with gills on the sides of your heads, their heads. They're great. Go look them up. They're extremely cute. Mm-hmm. And the, like, equivalent for this region of sphere of a key deer, what we have on Earth in the Florida Keys, these smaller deer that can operate in like these more swampy, like kind of mangrove type places. Those are much more forward, much more prominent than the human that you knew, but like you can sense a bit of them in this.
This one that we came across, like, I mean, is this the most recent one, you think? Is this the brightest one?
I think you navigated towards the brightest one that you could find, yeah.
Okay. I think that the brightest one could mean one of two things. I think it could be the most recent. But I also think that, like, it's kind of like looking at a long exposure photo. So if more of the changes sort of happened in one spot, it would be brighter. Ooh. You know, like, if you were to look on the ship, like, Travis's bunk area would be very bright compared to a lot of the other areas.
I like that so much. This is an area where this person changes frequently. What does the environment here look like? What have they chosen to make their comfortable spot?
Do you think it's kind of like a camp? Like, do you think that they kind of stay out here, like camp out here?
I think they live here exclusively.
Then I think that there is sort of, I don't know what deer kind of sleep in, but I imagine basically a big nest, you know, just okay. Like made with like maybe some of that moss, just to kind of like be cozy. It's more like a big pile of blankets than really like a nest that is a home for deer eggs.
Mm-hmm. I guess they still yeah. think like a human, right?
I think we understand how deer work. They lay eggs in nests.
And I think that there is also a little, like, a rock. You know, like, the Flintstones houses, how it's kind of, like, rocks built up to look mm-hmm. like... I think there's, mm-hmm. like, basically that, but very tiny.
Excellent. Excellent. As Travis is looking over this, I think this is built of a lot of things. Like, there is a touch of forest here mm-hmm. in that things have grown in a particular way that allowed this to be built and foster it, like, enduring. But it's also built, frankly, out of odds and ends that look like they came from people. There are, you know, coats there. There are blankets. There are probably some tools that are here. Things that shine in the darkness that stand out as this is not something that came from the forest. This is something that was brought into the forest that this changeling is using. And before we go into too much detail about that, I feel like it is more focused on Travis kind of like taking in, seeing that this is definitely the home of the person that they once knew, even though much time has passed since the last time you saw them, and they appear to be living very differently, there is something of the spirit of this person here. That faint, like, intermingling of what you saw in the transformations exists here within this space as well. The ghost of your friend. And with that, I think the finch flies in. And before we do too much writing bits, I want to cut back to Jonnet and Wei. Jonnet and Wei, you have, like, put your eyes together. And Lex, I would just love to know, what is it like as they enter the dream space? What are they experiencing?
I think that they're experiencing... It does physically feel like they're falling asleep, but, you know, being awake in their mind's eye, in their third eye, as they fall asleep. So there's this very smooth transition from moving into the real world into the dream space. And once you enter the dream space, there's this feeling of instability. And so I imagine that Wei, because this is Jonnet's, like, sort of first time exploring this space, like, Wei would need to teach him how to ground themselves in the space. And the way that you do that is to just, you know, touch your hand to the ground, essentially, and, you know, find solid ground and just, like, make the space real, like, make the space concrete. It just feels like when you're entering the dream, it's very, everything still seems very ethereal, and, like, your body feels ethereal, but you need to find a way to, like, make yourself corporeal. And so I imagine Wei kind of guiding Jonna's hand down, touch the floor, and then now they're both, like, connected to, like, the ground of the space. And then everything starts, like, firming up around them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can I do a small pitch on this?
Yes.
I feel like when entering the space, it feels like the first thing that you would see, that we, the audience, would see, would be, like, the representation of, like, eyes.
Yeah.
So you'd see the eye, and then you'd see, like, an outline of the character, and then they would slowly, as they, like, step into it, they, like, walk in and they get their color, they get their inking, and now they are a person, like, they are in the space.
Yeah.
And so it's like a similar thing where it's like, okay, you have to ground yourself and create and manifest the ground with which you will stand.
Yeah.
On which you will stand.
Yeah.
And so it's like you go and you touch nothing, like you see your fingers, like, press on nothing, mm-hmm. and then the lines of earth, like, draw themselves out in front of you, and now you are standing, and so, like, Jonnet maybe is standing on like a smaller, much smaller plot of land than Teacher Wei,
yeah,
and, like, the lines of his earth are, like, shaky, but they are solid enough to stand on.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Love it.
And so when Jonnet looks around, what is it just a void that we only have like our standing ground in?
I think we can have like a neutral space like that.
Yeah,
start.
Yeah, I think yeah. so too. Yeah, just a neutral space to start, and I imagine later on that the space can fill up with more things.
I feel so light. I feel like if I stop thinking about how I'm standing, I'll stop standing, and I'll either lift up or fall down. This is weird. It's like gliding, but without a glider.
Yeah, it's quite something, isn't it? Thankfully, the substance that we used earlier gives us a strong enough hold in this space, and the grounding exercise was just for you to find your bearings. So don't worry about falling out. Don't worry about losing access to the space. We are here together, and we can just be.
Just be. So Jonnet kind of looks around, looks at Teacher Wei, and then takes a step sort of out into the void. And then I imagine like a piece of rock manifests, and he steps on that, and then he takes another one, and then he takes a big old leap, and then lands on like a smaller, like a small patch of land.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks back at Teacher Wei. Where are we going?
We are going to create and see your vision.
There comes a time in every young seer's existence where they define a vision, what they see and wish to witness with their third eye. You've heard I generated a blind one. Yes, I'm something of a weird case if you could find one. I made my life in dreams and visions I would get in sleep. Fleeting words and hazy pictures, things that I could barely keep. In seeking light, I seized the night to ease my blinding darkness. Write my way back, bridge the gap and make my mind incarnate. My search for purpose and happiness led me back to me. I only use my skills to serve myself and chosen family. See, I've been burned too many times to aim for bigger things. But since you're just a kid, maybe it's better I don't clip your wings. So here's a tip, get your vision, see it crystal clear. Great is not enough, you gotta see yourself in 50 years. Lift the fear, steer your sails to what you're tripping towards. You'll find your clarity in training with the liquid swords.
Once again, Jonnet's kind of a little overwhelmed, and then I'm just gonna keep doing this whenever you do that.
Scotty
Of nightly splendors I once was told, of stars and moons and lights of gold, but never did I think it was mine to hold such celestial treasures in a box so cold. My mother told me that. She recited to me in her soft voice when I could not sleep. In truth, it's all I really remember of her, that poem. Passed away when I was very young, and the memory of her face, the smell, the shade of her hair, all that has faded, much like many of the things in my life. Oh, I do not mean to be dour, my friends. I was just thinking, when old men like myself begin to think, then we undoubtedly think backward. For you, I imagine, it is quite different, being so young. Your mind is full of tomorrow. What adventures you are to have. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I apparently am full to brim of nostalgia tonight. Would you mind if we indulged in a tale that was told in my youth? One I was told by my father and his father, and so on and so forth and so on. Really? Well, that's mighty kind of you. Now, how did it begin? Oh, yes. Once, in the days long ago, before feather weave and sky ships, before red feathers, before even the mariner, The stars were numerous in our sky. There lived a royal family, a king and a queen, and lords and ladies, and a castle nestled on a smoky mountain. And this royal family ruled over a valley that ran from the mountains to the sea, and they called their kingdom Anice. Now, the kingdom of Anice was a small place with quiet people, with quiet dreams. The people who lived there loved the woods and the fields, the rivers and the rocky coasts. They made small and quiet things. But the rulers of the land, the great house of Rhaenyan, looked askance at these quiet people they ruled. For while the people and the nation valued small and peaceful things, the royal family longed for something much grander. They wished for glory, for money, for conquest, to be like the nations that surrounded them with their armies and navies. But try as they might, none of their grand schemes came to any fruition. The valley remained as it was, peaceful as a field of fireflies at twilight. Now, in the days of our story, the king of Anice was called Povero, and he sat on the throne much as his father did, and forefathers before him. He ruled the valley and longed for the riches and glory of his neighbors. And King Povero tried everything. He declared war, but no one showed up. He tried courtly intrigue, but no one believed the tales he concocted. He tried to duel his long-hated rival, and somehow the two of them became the best of friends. Time after time, scheme after scheme, nothing ever changed. It vexed King Povero so much that one day he declared, "I will go to the mountains, and I will live there. I will leave my crown and robe and be as the quiet folk." And the queen and his advisors nodded and said, "I'm sure that would be nice to get away." And so Povero went to the mountains. And there he lived his quiet life of his quiet people. He hunted and he fished. He picked apples. He made a little house for himself and even kept bees. And he hated it. Every bit of it. It was too quiet, and no one knew him when he passed by, and even his bees seemed to mock him with their lazy buzzing. And as his life grew quieter and quieter, Povero got angrier and angrier, until one day, out in his orchard quietly picking apples, he reached his breaking point. "Am I doomed to be forgotten?" he cried to the heavens. "Will no one know my name?" So loud was his yelling that the very mountains around him echoed with his voice. And when the echo ended, something answered. "And what is your name?" came a smooth and dangerous voice. Povero turned, and there, sitting on that stump of one of his apple trees, was something. Not a person or an animal, not a monster or a spirit. It was something. Something wreathed in a shadowed light, with many eyes that stared at Povero's very soul. And though fear crept into Povero, he heard himself reply, "I am me, and my name is Povero, king of these lands." "And what is a king?" asked the something of smoke and gold with too many eyes. "A king is me. A king is the most important person among all persons," Povero replied. And the something laughed a laugh of broken glass and shattered moons, all mirth and no merriment. "The most important," the something replied. "How can you, a mere human, claim to be the most important anything?" And it laughed and laughed and laughed. And Povero never forgot that laugh. "Oh, mighty King Povero," the something finally said, its laughter still ringing the ears of the king. "Son of Linus, father of Artemont, who is to come, mortal man and most important. This I promise you, I, who am endless, will remember you. And that which I remember shall endure. And what is more, I will give unto you other names that you shall give your children, so that I might remember them as well. But only one will there ever be a generation for I'm busy and will not remember more. And you shall have much. You shall have gold, and you shall have plenty, but only for one. And the something reached out and touched the king, and the mind of Pavero swam with names. The king eventually returned to his castle and picked back up his crown and returned to his quiet throne and nevermore sought the great deeds of those nations that stood around him. And in the days that followed, he had a son that he named Artamund. And when Artamund was merely 8 years old, the very stars fell from the sky. But Pavero and his son Artamund were remembered. And while the kingdom of Venice burned and the world around them crumbled, the two of them, and only the two of them, endured. And so the years marched on. Artamund gave way to others, all named from names that Pavero carved into a tree, an apple tree, at that place where he and his son lived a quiet life after the end of the kingdom of Venice. And when the kingdom fell away, the crown lost, the kingdom and castles crumbled, the line of Pavero, however, shifted well. From monarchs to business moguls, from merchants to landed money, their castle became an estate, their subjects into servants and employees. And those that came after Pavero, Artamund, Pinella, Amarantia, Bergamont, Mace, all were remembered, all lived extraordinary lives, full of glory and riches, but all tinged with darkness and a joyless mirth. For as their glory grew, so did their malice and greed. For it was never enough, and all the houses and fine clothes, the good food and the well-appointed stables could not hide the rot from within. And yet, with every generation, the next name of the tree was used. But one day, 5 generations removed from King Pavero, a child was born to this dark and mirthless family whose name was not carved upon an old name and tree. The family lamented and begged the mother of the child to name him as the tree intended. "He will ruin us all," they shouted. "You must name him Caspria as it is on the tree."
"Don't you love him? Then give him the life he deserves and name him Caspria."
"He will end his life a pauper, unknown and unloved."
So they said, so they begged. But the mother of the child held firm and whispered the child's own name in his ear, and spoke of soft and quiet things, of kindness and hope, of right and wrongs and doing mercies, of the laughter of the wind in the trees, and the joy of a good fire and good company, of the freedom of being good. And the line of Pavero wilted, my friends, as suddenly as a blossom taken by the frost. Misfortune rained down upon that house in a less ostentatious manner. For while there was always money, there was never peace. The mother died, the other relatives as well. The line of Pavero shrank and shriveled until it was just the boy and his father, and there was no peace. The boy with the wrong name grew, and the father wilted, held together by spite and regret, until finally the young boy, his head full of hope and adventure, escaped the mirthless darkness of his father's house and went forth into the world. But one day, many years after he had fled, after many, many adventures, the boy, now a man, heard the news. His father had died, leaving everything to him. And what did this wrong-named son do? He did what his mother would have wanted, and what King Pavero had done so long ago in Anise. He gave the fortune away to go and live in the mountains and find that quiet life. And they say Then on a clear autumn night, just like this one, you'll find that wrong-named son sitting by a fire just like this, telling tales, living his quiet life. And that is, as they say, the end.
Campaign Skyjax is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
The history of role-playing games is weird and wild, and we here at System Mastery are determined to look through it all.
Every heartbreaker that drove a man to bankruptcy to see his vision of D&D with really specific armor maintenance rules come to fruition.
Every game where you get increasingly certain as you read it that this is all just one person's weird fetish.
Every system that painstakingly recreates how medieval life was really like, and then also you can cast Fireball.
The System Mastery podcast wallows in the filth of RPG history. Come.
Join us in the muck
at System Mastery.
You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Like System Mastery. System Mastery is a delightful stroll through the history of role-playing games. Except the games are terrible and the hosts are real jerks about everything. Join hosts Jeff and John as they explore the weirdest games ever made to talk about what worked, what went wrong, and which Silverhawk was the best. It was Hot Wing. You can find their shows at SystemMasteryPodcast.com or through a link on the OneShot website. Finally, Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. He also co-stars and consults on Showtime's Work in Progress. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at JohnnyNBriefs or on his podcasts, Bill Buds and Dilettante Ball. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at PhantomArtsENT. You can also find them streaming on twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him on Twitter over at ArnePArrott. You can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony or on his podcast, Neo Scum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Fiona Pup. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists, and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show uses a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals who were fired by the private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games.
To the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.